C1M. Number 9B.
But this fifth, you see, but this fifth subject has a very cruel touch. It leaves a cruel touch if it is not followed by the sixth subject. Because as Mrs. Eddy herself asks there and says, well then, what hope of happiness, what noble ambition can then inspire the child who inherits propensities that must either be overcome or reduce him to a loathsome wreck? See, there is a bitter pill in that fifth subject, because the child is allowed to speak and say, why should I have all these grosser traits of character? Why have I all those inherited propensities? It's not my fault. Why should I be so ill-treated by destiny that I am the child of these parents and not the child of other parents? This subject, you see, if Mrs. Eddy would stop with the fifth subject, then this question would be unanswered. And most of us, a great percentage of everyone, would feel that we have been treated badly by human destiny. So there must be a savior. There must be a savior to that situation. And truth is always a savior. We have always seen in the order of spiritual being that truth is the savior. And my word here in the sixth subject, she shows that savior. She shows how that child, no matter if it feels that it has inherited good qualities or that it has inherited bad qualities, that child, whatever it is, the child of what parents, must find the savior. Namely, where it must realize that no matter if the child has good or so-called bad parents, that it must have God as his parents. That only is the savior. In truth, therefore, we come to the point where the children should understand man's higher nature and should understand how it can save himself from all ancestral beliefs. So we come to this sixth subject, you see, where we really free ourselves of the matrix of mortality. See, the chapter on marriage started by making the concession that man is a creator, making the concession that each one of us must say, I have been created materially from human parents. I can't deny that I am conscious of a body and of senses and of all what that implies, and therefore I can't deny that I have a constant feeling that I am the outcome of a human material creation, which we must be quite clear, Mrs. Eddy says, is legitimate in Christian Science until we begin in absolute Christian Science to discern that creation is intact, that we have seen yesterday. So, as we have to see that in some measure, and sometimes in very big measure, we are just the product of mortality, and through the five first subjects have found a principle how to make the best out of it, how to, in spite of the concession that has been made, we can make the best out of it in order to advance spiritual good. There comes the moment of truth where we have to free ourselves even from that law of mortality, from the matrix of mortality. And that's what the sixth subject really wants us to show. It's therefore that which is important for each one of us, because each one of us has sooner or later to work out the proposition that we are not from mortals, but that we are from God. And that is the sixth subject. How can we do that? And so we come to the sixth subject and ask ourselves again, as we have done yesterday with the other subject, namely, to what qualities do we have to be wedded? The sixth subject, you remember, I just repeat, the first five subjects were, first, to be wedded to respect for moral and legal laws. Second, to be wedded to purer and purer affections. Third, to be wedded to selflessness, to the unity of interest. Fourth, to be wedded to fundamental, basic foundations, to scientific foundations. Fifth, we saw that it was that we inwardly must be wedded to an ever-rising and refined state of mind, that ascendancy of good over evil. And now, in the sixth subject, she asks us that which God has put together, and no man shall put asunder, is that we should be wedded to a metaphysical understanding of man's higher nature. Here, she appeals always to those qualities of scientific, true understanding. She appeals to be wise, to understand the science of being, to learn the Christian science, to discern this science, to regard life more metaphysically. It's all against the counterfeit of understanding scientifically, namely, that we should not thrust in the laws of erring human concepts, of false views, of believing in material laws, of rejecting the science of mind, you see, of disregard of law. You can see what she wants to bring out here. He says, well, the savior to the whole situation now is the savior to the whole matrix of mortality is really an understanding of science, an understanding of man's higher nature as derived from God, as derived from mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. That's why the sixth subject has seven subtones. That's why the 6 days of creation always has seven subtones, because always when one comes to the 6 days of creation, one gets a synonymous term. You know that. So, by being wedded, she says here, by being wedded to an ever higher understanding of man's higher nature, what effect has that blessed state of consciousness? What effect is it? And the scriptural note always says, well, its effect is life and truth, as its effect is always a resurrecting effect on manhood. And so here we get constantly a sense of exaltation, of higher, higher, exalted. And it is always concerned in truth with the higher nature of man against the lower nature of mortals. It's all full with the term man, whereas before that term man hardly ever appeared, if ever. In the sixth day we come now to the manhood, and so we have here the higher nature of man, man as the offspring of spirit. We have spirit is man's primitive and ultimate source of being, that God is the father of man, and the law and life is the law of man's being. We have here that the discerning man's spiritual and eternal existence, you see, we come to quite a sublimer standpoint than ever before. As you ponder these different stages, you will see how in that, see, she says, in the resurrection we shall be like the angels in heaven. Well, through the seven stages she shows how to come to that angelic state of man. And at the end of the chapter she speaks about that, that in the resurrection they shall neither marry nor give into marriage, but shall be like the angels. But how to become an angel? That's the question, you see. Just liking to be like the angel, that's very nice. But how to get there? To be an absolutist is very easy, but very stupid. But to be an absolutist combined with the way to the absolute, that's very wonderful. So let's see the way to that point. And here she shows through, in marriage, through those seven stages, she shows how to come to that stage of being like the angels in heaven. So we can summarize this whole sixth subject in an epitome which combine all these various factors. We can see what she is going to tell us here through seven subtones is that through that growth in our understanding of Christian Science, or through the growth in the understanding of man's higher nature as taught by God, that through wedding ourselves to this understanding of the higher nature of man, see, something happens. That through that we unite to an exalted, to a higher status of manhood. That's what she shows here. And she shows that as we do that, we contribute to the universe enormously, namely all through that chapter, through that paragraph, through that subject, excuse me for babbling on, all through that sixth subject, she shows that we are contributing, so to say, to the general level of humanity, that we arise in a general way the status of society. Now, how does she show that? And so we want to go through the text. First, we have, as I said, there are seven subtones as in the days of creation, because the whole chapter on marriage is laid out in the structure of the days of creation. You may say, why? Because prayer has been laid out 7 times 7, and atonement has been laid out seven. Why is marriage laid out differently? Well, first of all, I must tell you, I didn't look out for another layout. I just wanted to know what is in it. And little by little, it showed that, after all, the layout of the days of creation presented itself. But why is it so? Well, it is so. First of all, we will notice through the whole textbook that mostly when we come to a Christianity chapter, that the layout is in the days of creation. You may think, well, that's funny, because the days of creation represent the Word. Yes, but Christianity are always those chapters which demonstrate to us the days of creation. The Christianity is the demonstration, And what it demonstrates by translating itself to us is that it awakens in us the true creation. And that appears to us in step-by-step ways as the days of creation. So the whole thing is very logical. There is no controversy and no contradiction about that. Because that as we look at it from the standpoint of the way of life, we always must remember we look at the textbook at the present moment in these talks from the standpoint of the way of life. And therefore we look at it in the way where we say, what steps has the student, the beginner, to do when he wants to follow first, his first attempt, this textbook story? That's the way of life. And that naturally is always the attitude of the seeker, and therefore always the attitude of the word. So here we find this first indication of how Christianity always comes to us, the sense of Christianity comes to us and awakes in us, always the word, the creation, the true creation, and a step-by-step creation. Well, now let's go back to the text. In Truth as Mind, she presents first that we must recognize that the divine mind and not the human erring concept is really that which governs and controls our life. You see, when we come to the sixth day in the days of creation, we touch in a measure the synonymous terms. And so here it is at once mind, divine mind, that is in focus and says, mind, at not hearing human concept, is that which looks after men. See, up to this point, especially in the tone of life, it was the heavenly-mindedness of the parents that were looking after the children. And it was, we were at the chance if these parents were heavenly-minded or not. But now comes the Savior. In truth comes the Savior. You can't leave it to chance. That's why in the fifth subject he spoke so much about the chance. If per chance, if some fortuitous circumstance, you see, chance circumstances. But we can't leave our lives to chance. We can't leave our lives to the matrix of mortality, either good or bad mortality, a better or a worse state of mortality. Once we have to break through and leave this whole sense of mortality behind and say, what is my master? What is my father? What is my mother? Where do I come from? And so I have to go back to God, to the synonyms. And here we go back to the synonyms. Here she goes back to mind. The first marginal heading is the mind creative. Up to this point, she hardly used the synonymous terms. Here it is, the divine mind is that which forms the bud and blossom and will care for the human body, even as it closes the lid. Now it's mind that cares for the human body. In the fifth subject, it was the parent's thought. It was the patient, the practitioner's thought that cares for the patient. It was the teacher's thought that cares for the student. Now it is mind that cares for the human body, that will close us and inspire us and give us what we need and look after our health. And she says, and therefore we should not let erring concepts interfere with it. She puts away these erring concepts, that we should not attribute more and more intelligence to matter, that mortals should not interfere with God's government. we should not interfere with God's government by thrusting in laws of erring human concepts, and that our false views about God only hide eternal harmony. He shows in this, you see, in truth it is always as if one would break through a wall and just enter the city and just tear down the veil that tries to separate us from the Holy of Holies, which says, well, put aside every erring human concept, just go back to one thing, to mind, to spirit, to soul, to principle, to life, truth, and love. There is our origin. Therein is our destiny. Therein we are created and born and educated and unfolded, and therein is our life and our future. So, here she comes and says that the science of mind is a superior law, and that it must be superior in our consciousness. Well, there is a lot in it, but let me just skip some of them. Yes, let me just show the connection between life and truth again in this way. In the section of life, you see, she said that the entire education of children should be such as to form habits of obedience to the laws of spiritual law. That habits of obedience to the moral and spiritual law, with which the child can meet and master the belief in so-called physical laws, a belief which breeds disease. So life postulated that the children should be instructed in an obedience to moral and spiritual law. But it left it at that. It just made the proposition, as life usually does. It just left the proposition. But then we must ask ourselves, well, what is the whole content of it? What is the whole form of it? What are the pillars of this obedience to spiritual and laws? And so truth as mind brings the first pillar of it, brings the first constituent of this consciousness, with which the child can free himself from the belief that he is a child of parents. And every one of us has to do that. The time comes to each one of us, no matter if we have had a very happy youth, if we had had wonderful parents, or if we had a very sad youth and we are not very happy with the way the parents treated us, no matter the one or the other, both are wrong. The one is better than the other, and as she said, first we must choose between the lesser evil. But then comes the time in truth where we must see that we have never been created by matter, never been born by parents, never been born by a mother, never been brought up by people, that we never had a past, a human past, never a bad past, never a past with lots of disagreeable incidents, but that there is only one past, namely that mind was always generating, that spirit was always unfolding spiritual qualities, and that soul was always naming us in God's likeness, in God's name. Thy name shall be called Wonderful, or the Blessed, or whatever it is, the Peaceful. That is our name. So that's the first point. Now, we'll make a break here.